The following is a special 20-minute preview of this episode. You can listen to the full version at patreon.com/mastersofpod.
Let's try that again.
Hello and welcome to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast which is allegedly about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld. I'm Milo Edwards, someone who's never seen Seinfeld, and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host Phoebe Roy.
Hello.
That is all she ever says, and this week it's just me and Phoebe, it's just the lads, because I'm going to Australia tomorrow, and we're recording a lot of episodes.
Doing a lot of episodes, because content never sleeps.
Content does. If there's one thing I've learned from my entire career as a comedian, content never fucking sleeps.
Content never sleeps.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the guys in that Soviet experiment that isn't real.
What, where they had to make lots of content? They had to lay in lots of episodes before the fall of the wall.
The Soviet influencer experiment.
Yeah.
They had to evacuate all of their most powerful influencers from East Germany into other Warsaw Pact countries and the Soviet Union itself to prevent them falling into Western hands.
1989, the group chat going off. Yeah, we're going to have to do an emergency podcast, lads.
Getting David Hasselhoff on the emergency podcast. Podcasting live from the top of the Berlin Wall.
In many ways, wasn't Hasselhoff on the Berlin Wall the first podcast?
Maybe.
Maybe. Not the first podcast, but definitely one in... Definitely one in a grand tradition of podcasting.
Yeah, Hasselhoff is certainly, he's got form. I wonder if he's got a podcast now, it wouldn't surprise me.
Who, David Hasselhoff?
Yeah.
Don't know.
Don't hassle the Hoff with David Hasselhoff.
I mean, that's the obvious name, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just about minor inconveniences. He just gets celebrities on and interviews them about, you know.
About different hassles that they've experienced.
What they find to be a hassle. Like when there's... You know something that's been grinding my gears recently? Mm-hmm. When you go in the supermarket and they've got like 15 self-checkouts, but only one of them's turned on. So what's the point of that? Why? The others aren't even turned off. They're just blocked. So they're not even saving electricity. They're just wasting my time.
You know what they've started to do in my local supermarket?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't understand why they've done it.
Yep.
It's so annoying. So... Once upon a time, they used to have a hook with the plastic bags, and they're those kind of, you know, those the kind of the greenwashing plastic bags where they're still plastic bags, but they
bags for life.
But they're not bags for life. They're
a thicker plastic bag.
Yeah, from like a kind of Newtonian perspective, they sort of exist between matter. So they're not a bag for life, but they're not like a kind of little kind of shitty crumply bag.
Well, so I think those were like, that's what always was a bag for life until the plastic bag tax came in. And then they invented the sort of like the Hessian bag for life.
Oh, no, you've been able to get the Hessian bag for life and the canvas bag for life for a good long while. Mm. Pre-2010, I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Interesting.
But so they used to have those on a hook, which is, you know, fine.
The bag hook.
Obvious place for them to be. They don't have them on a hook anymore. What they do is they give a bundle of them to the now two or three poor bastards who are employed to like intervene when the self-checkouts go wrong, which is all the fucking time.
Mm.
And also to like put through
when
alcohol,
you've bought, like limes or a bottle of Johnny
like
Walker
or to
with a security
or to kind
tag
of
on
put,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Or to put through kind of age restricted items.
Yeah, paracetamol,
so,
Red Bull.
So this is a big supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
There are absolutely a fuck ton of self checkouts. They're all too close together. Everyone is kind of, you know, kind of hived up and stressed like a kind of rat experiment. And then you have these three members of staff who are trying to look out for people doing the kind of the stand on their tiptoes, try to catch someone's eye. But also, if you want a bag, you've got to summon one of them as well. Mm. And presumably, this is supposed to be a kind of bag reduction tactic, but it doesn't. It doesn't work. The same number of people are getting bags. Sorry?
I think it's a loss prevention tactic, which is insane because the bags cost them like nothing. Oh, what do they care if you steal a bag?
But you could still steal the bag if you're taking it off them.
The supermarkets I've been in where they're doing this, the guy has to come over and ring it through for you.
Oh, no, like, they don't.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not sticking around to make sure that you're beeping the bag.
Yeah, this is insane. The supermarket.
This is an ideal subject for don't hassle the Hoff.
Indeed, the big Sainsbury's in Harlow has instituted a system where there's an electric gate, and you have to scan your receipt to get out of the self checkouts, like you're in some kind of shoplifting horse racing enclosure. That really wound me up.
New.
Yeah, I don't care for it. It's a sign that things aren't going well in the country. I think the little greyhound racing gate to get out of the self-checkouts.
They should introduce greyhounds into the supermarkets just to kind of keep you on your toes during the experience.
It certainly would. They're quite spooky greyhounds.
Mm.
They're massive and they look at you funny.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to have one, but I'd be happy enough to kind of scoot alongside one in a supermarket.
Yeah, it's just there.
I'd like to race one.
Licking the lemons.
Sorry?
It's just there, like, licking the lemons and sort of looking up at you.
Why is he licking the lemons?
I don't know, sort of weird thing a greyhound would do.
Oh, no, sorry. I just thought there was, like, some kind of, like, sort of connection between greyhounds and lemons that I didn't know about.
I don't think so. Not as far as I'm aware. Unless, of course, they're into the self-asphyxie wank, which...
Well, which they may well be. They're much bigger than I always think they're going to be.
Yeah, they're because really big.
Because I think I've been acculturated to like the mini greyhound and the whippet and so on.
Yeah, the whippet is quite a bit smaller.
So when you see an actual...
The mini greyhound is obviously...
When you see an actual greyhound, you're like, look at you, you fucker. I bet you can run.
Yeah, they're built like Peter Crouch.
Yeah.
They're like preposterously tall without being like particularly like beefy in any way.
Or, let's be honest here, who was here first? Peter Crouch is built like a greyhound.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, and he does love to chase a rabbit.
Yeah.
In fairness to him.
They should send him down to the Walthamstow tracks.
Yeah, RIP.
Does the Walthamstow tracks not exist anymore? Or did Peter
luxury
Crouch die?
Luxury flats, mate.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Peter Crouch has been turned into luxury flats. Yeah, I believe now the biggest dog racing track in the sort of like North London-ish area is actually in Harlow.
Oh.
There's still a dog racing track in Harlow. I've never been there, but maybe we should go podcast day out.
Have a little day. Yeah, I think that might be quite fun. Although it's quite cruel, isn't it, greyhound racing? It's not.
We'll invite Peter Crouch. I mean, is it? I don't know. Do they just run after a thing? How cruel can it be?
No, but I don't think what happens to retired greyhounds is very nice.
Yeah. But then half the time when they say stuff like that, I'm like, okay, so just, why don't you just go and adopt retired greyhounds? Because plenty of people,
I might adopt a retired greyhound. I might call your bluff on that front.
Sorry, I wasn't leveling this at you specifically. I was just being well, you know, the retired greyhounds, yeah, they just shoot them. And it's like, well, that's only because no one wants them. If anyone wanted to adopt a retired greyhound, then they'd probably happily be like, yeah, take him. They're not like, I have to shoot him for moral reasons.
I think that's what they're saying. I think they have to.
This greyhound has done things. He's seen things.
Yeah. Like they have to.
It's like an XL bully.
I think no, it's sort of more like a kind of post 45 Nazi officer. They just that there was there was no rehabilitation there. They just had to take them out back and just.
Well, so really, the greyhounds they should be sent to Argentina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a
Argentina or NASA. Yeah.
Argentina or NASA, or you know the greyhound treatment.
Operation Rabbit, they called that.
Yeah. What was the revenge of the rabbits?
Luring all of the greyhounds over to work at NASA.
I'm still entertained by the idea of Peter Crouch being turned into luxury flats.
Yeah. I mean, no, indeed, we're doing it for review.
Yeah, we're doing joint ownership. Yeah, we're going to be living in the form of Peter Crouch.
Oh, that's a shame. That really used to be such a landmark for the community.
Such a beautiful spot.
Mm.
God, yeah, old London's being you know, gutted bit by bit.
Peter Crouch was the other landmark in Portsmouth, apart from the old Spinnaker Tower.
Yeah, all right.
There you go. Yeah. So we're
can't accuse us of being London centric. We know about other landmarks. About
Portsmouth. My cousin went to university there. I've been to Portsmouth. Yeah, we're talking about season 9, episode 14, The Strongbox, and it's a weird one. There's some very Milo coded stuff from George this episode.
Yeah, and I think this is a fun Jerry storyline, because Jerry doesn't have a monster of the week, or rather he does have a monster of the week, but the monster of the week is not a woman on this occasion.
It's the Spectre of Kramer.
This was aired on the 5th of February, 1998. And on this day, in 1998, Alberto Acciarato was convicted of harassing his ex-wife.
Right.
And it says here, Ingrid Rossellini, and I don't know who that is. Is this like Isabella Rossellini's sister?
The lesser known Rossellini. Right, hang on.
Yeah, a kind of Rossellini minor. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And
Ingrid Rossellini, writer, Ingrid Bergman's daughter, very reasonably calling her Ingrid as well. Yeah. So yeah. Born in Rome. Her siblings are Pia Lundstrom, Isabella Rossellini.
Yeah, like isn't Isabella Rossellini also Ingrid Bergman's daughter?
I presume so.
It's just that, yeah, because when I said, like, Ingrid Rossellini, also she must be related to Isabella Rossellini, I didn't expect the shared name to be the first name with someone famous.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean.
That's a bit surprising. Well, anyway, her ex-husband was convicted of harassing her. So.
Oh, okay.
I hope that had a good outcome.
And she seems to still be going strong.
Okay, well, that's good. I don't know who her ex-husband was. It's quite funny if her ex-husband was just like some guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also in sports news, the author Tom Clancy confirms that he signed an agreement to purchase the Minnesota Vikings, which was an NFL franchise record because it was more than $200 million.
There you go.
So that's all that happened on the 5th of February, 1998. It was a
dull day in history apart from the airing of Seinfeld's The Strongbox.
Unless you happen to be Ingrid Rossellini, of course, in which case it's probably quite a kind of jubilant day in history.
Mm. Yeah. Well, of course, in the late 90s, you know, everything was sort of, was kind of simmering down in preparation for 9/11. They were like, we need to get some good chill end of history stuff in before September 11th, 2001. We need to keep events to a minimum. So that we can sell more Fukuyama books.
Also, you've got to remember as well, in 1998, we had a false event prep because we had the Y2K and the Millennium Bug business.
Yeah, yeah.
But that turned out to be not the event at all. The actual event was a year later. And then like some kind of fucking smart ass was like, yeah, well, this is actually the first year of the first year of the Millennium.
The Millennium Bug was really funny.
Yeah, it was funny. But
what if the number becomes 2000 and all the computers in the world break? And then it's like, how likely is that, really?
You know what's a fun type of guy?
Yeah.
It's the type of guy who says, well, everyone says, oh, yeah, we were all like so worried about the Millennium Bug, and then it turned out not to be anything. But what if it absolutely did turn out to be something, and that was the big switch clicker, and that was when we got kind of shuffled onto the wrong timeline. Maybe
so
like,
it was like it, cosmically something,
yeah,
rather than in the computer.
Well, it was in the computer, but that kind of switched reality off and kind of shunted us onto a different reality.
Switched
mode.
Reality off. We're now in the computer.
You don't want to switch reality off. You don't want to switch reality off because you'll never, you don't know if you'll be able to get it back on. It's like a Chromebook.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Without reality, it's hard to switch it back on. When it's not operational, sort of a contradiction in terms.
Operationally, nightmare.
Yeah. There was a chip shop we used to go to in Spain, because at some point in our holiday, we'd sometimes have fish and chips. And they had, it was that kind of chip shop you could eat in there, and they had like murals. It was run by English people, and one of the things they had on the mural, I mean, this must have been like 2001, 2002, was like the grave of the Millennium Bug.
What?
Which I always thought was quite funny. Yeah, it was like a, because it was like an underwater scene mural with like different things. And one of the things they had was like a grave of the Millennium Bug, like a little mound with a headstone and like a little drawing of like a kind of bug-like figure that was labeled the Millennium Bug. Yeah. Really, they should have buried it in the Millennium Dome.
What you used to be able to get is in Topshop, you used to be able to get three thongs for a tenner.
Yeah.
Which was obviously, you know, a very kind of thrifty thing for your average.
They've not got much fabric in them, so
yeah. For your average teenage girl.
Mm.
And you used to be able to get Millennium Bug thongs.
Millennium Bug thongs?
Yeah.
Was this pre or post millennium? Was it a sort of post millennium irony thing, or was it a pre millennium like
about,
fear
just
the millennium
about pre,
bug?
So like kind of 1999 or so.
Okay.
And it would have like a, and it would have
shield your pedendum from the Millennium Bug with this special.
What? So what, you think it was like a kind of talisman, like keeping a kind like
yeah, exactly.
The Egyptians keeping a little statue of a tiny crocodile or hippo in their house to protect them from.
You'd feel a right mug if the year 2000 sort of interfered with your vagina in any way.
Oh, you certainly would. That's not something you're ever living down, I don't think.
No.
No.
You know what that is, love? The Millennium Bug's messed up your pH.
Yeah. Because that could be like yet another thing that doctors could just pretend is female hysteria.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, the Millennium Bug messing up everyone's...
She reckons
menstrual cycle with the Windows 98 calendar.
She reckons she's got the Millennium Bug, but you know, we know it's just health anxiety.
Yeah. It's just minor women's whiplash.
Minor women's whiplash. Minor women's Millennium Pussy.
That's right. I've got that Millennium Pussy. That was Robbie Williams in the year 2000.
Well, that was rejected first drafts.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't scan Millennium Pussy as a song to the tune of the song Millennium. That was why, you know, even after Guy Chambers had quit, they had to be like, come on, Robbie, you can't do this.
And Robbie, if nothing else, is somebody who takes Scansion very seriously.
He does.
All right, so how's the episode start, Milo?
We open with
Costanza fully inhabiting the spirit of Milo Edwards.
Yeah, so he's trying to break up with his girlfriend and she just says no. Mm. And then he's like, oh, okay, I guess, well, fine then.
I mean, this has literally happened to you.
Yeah.
I know it's not funny. It's just whenever there's something so kind of like precise, you just sort of think, you know what? This really is a documentary.
It's laser targeted, you know, tungsten rod from space. It's not like, it didn't happen exactly like that, but it's pretty close.
Like if you were gonna condense it down to a sitcomable, a plot, then I think it would have looked a bit like that.
I think this is the sitcomable a plot. It would be
if you kind of distilled it down to its elements. But remember, of course, because we're in the Millennium Bug timeline. So when you watch episodes of a sitcom that was made before the reality switch off, you are technically seeing an episode which is just aimed at you. The version of this episode I saw was slightly different and was more aimed at me.
The Costanza bug.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
Yeah. So she just says no. And then George seeks out Jerry's advice and he's like, well, she said no, what do I do? And then Jerry's like, it's not like firing nuclear weapons off a submarine. You don't both have to turn a key at the same time to break up with someone. And then later on, she says to George, no, it's like firing the weapons on a submarine. We have to both turn a key at the same time.
Yeah, I like this recurring bit about the turning of the key, particularly since I'm, again, like when you found yourself in a similar situation, I think I did actually use this analogy without really thinking about it.
Thanks for checking out the free preview of this episode. You can listen to the full episode at patreon.com/mastersofpod.